This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. I'm president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. I've had the privilege of joining you several times over the last few weeks and even the last few months. Remember that Oklahoma Wesleyan University is an evangelical Christian university, proudly conservative and proudly in favor of capitalism, free enterprise, and constitutional liberty. We actually have a center for capitalism, free enterprise, constitutional liberty here on our campus. We believe that capitalism is good, that free enterprise is better than the opposite, and that the Constitution is actually a seminal document that should be honored for a free society and a free republic. We also are grounded in the primacy of Jesus Christ. We believe that Jesus is the Son of God, the priority of Scripture. Scripture is the Word of God. The pursuit of truth, that truth is given by God. It isn't made up by you or me. And then finally, the fourth pillar of our mission statement is the practice of wisdom, that integrity, the integration of head and heart and fact and faith and belief and behavior is demanded by God. It is not optional. You should be a person that actually practices what you preach. That's Oklahoma Wesleyan University. Remember that the call-in number here is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. And remember that if you want to follow Tony Perkins on Twitter, his handle is T Perkins. If you want to follow me, mine is Dr. Everett Piper. That's D-R-E-V-E-R-E-T-T-P-I-P-E-R. And the website for the Family Research Council is frc.org. And if you want to follow Oklahoma Wesleyan University and what we're doing, it's OKWU.edu. Well, a rundown on today's program. It is going to be a great program, so stick with us today. In the first segment, we're going to talk to Travis Weber, the director of the Center for Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. He's been at the Gorsuch hearings, and we want him to give us a rundown of those, give us a firsthand update of what's going on, and help us understand some of the debate over this particular judicial nominee. Is he good? Is he bad? What should conservatives think? What should Christians think that are concerned with our First Amendment rights and our religious liberty? What should the Little Sisters of the Poor think that are having to sue the federal government to stay out of their health care and not force a bunch of celibate nuns to buy contraception that they don't want and won't need that includes abortifacient medications? What should the pro-life women at Oklahoma Wesleyan University think, who are standing side by side, literally at the Supreme Court steps with the Little Sisters, because we don't believe that we should be forced to buy medication for our health care that it's antithetical to our evangelical biblical faith. The women at Oklahoma Wesleyan don't want abortifacient drugs. We're smart enough to figure out what to include in our health care, and we shouldn't be insulted by the federal government to suggest otherwise. Talk about misogyny. Who's the real misogynist here, and who's the real classical feminist? We believe in the feminine. We believe that females are smart enough to make their own decisions on health care, and if they're pro-life, they shouldn't be forced. They shouldn't be forced to buy products they don't want. And the Oklahoma Wesleyan women are pro-life by definition. They don't get hired if they're not. The men here are likewise. Everyone is, because that's a cornerstone of our mission and our identity. As we go into the second segment, we'll talk with Jessica Vaughn at the Center for Immigration Studies. She'll join us to talk about the Rockville High School rape case, where two illegal immigrants, if I recall the story correctly, in their 20s, 20 years old or older, actually violently raped a 14-year-old girl in a restroom at Rockville High School. What in the world is going on? When are we going to realize that this worship at the altar of multiculturalism results in a vacuum where violence and vengeance rushes in to fill that vacuum that's been left void because we have expunged culture of the Judeo-Christian ethic and the virtues that are taught in Scripture and the virtues that are the foundation for a free republic? As we go into the bottom of the hour, Terry Beatley with the Hosea Initiative will help us sort out all the odd pro-choice comments made by conservative, quote-unquote, host Tommy Lahren with The Blaze when she recently was a guest on The View. Tommy is a young woman who is a routine has a routine program with The Blaze, a conservative program, recently, as just a few months ago, said that those who are advocating for abortion were quote-unquote baby killers. But yet she went on The View this past week and said that she was a pro-choice conservative and that the government should stay out of her guns, but likewise the government should stay out of her body. And she thus shocked so many, The View hosts, as well as many progressives that applauded her comments, but she shocked those in the conservative world who thought that Tommy believed that abortion was the killing of a baby. So what in the world has happened here? And how about Glenn Beck's response to that? And then finally, this is going to be a great one. Rounding out the show in the last 15 minutes, we're going to have a reporter from Denmark. Her name is Iben Thranholm, a Danish journalist who's been reporting on multiculturalism and how it's destroying Europe. And this article that I pulled up and read this week is called "Is Denmark Next? Is Denmark's Demise Imminent?" because of what's happening in the rest of Europe, and in particular its neighbor there in Sweden. So let's go back to the top of the program here. We have Neil Gorsuch, who's been nominated for confirmation, and he's been sitting, he's finished 2 days, he's got a third day coming in terms of his confirmation hearings. What do you think of this? The progressives on the left are coming unglued. They are writing article after article, and I'm sure many of you have read them, that make Gorsuch out to be a red-necked conservative who doesn't care about anything but corporate America and greed, and he has no concern whatsoever for the average Joe, the average American person, and for the upholding of the Constitution. We also see that in some of the confirmation hearings that he's being, I'm going to suggest, ridiculed, at least implicitly so, by some of the senators who are asking him questions that imply that being an originalist is a bad thing. Holding to the original intent of the Constitution is an antiquated idea that should be disparaged, and anyone who suggests that the original language of the Constitution should be the governing philosophy, that you should subscribe to that original language as your governing philosophy of upholding law, that somehow you are a backward redneck who doesn't understand contemporary society. In fact, one senator asked Judge Gorsuch, what do you think about the fact that the Constitution doesn't even refer to women? There's no reference to women in the Constitution. In fact, it uses the pronoun he and him constantly. It never refers to she or her. Therefore, because you're an originalist, Judge Gorsuch, you must believe that women don't have the right to vote, and women don't have the right to become president, and women have no rights whatsoever. In fact, they're non-existent within the Constitution. So what do you think about that? The omission of the pronoun, the female pronoun, what does that mean for women? Do you see the implicit negative with regard to originalist language here? It's the same ploy that the progressives use to critique Scripture. Because when I say that as a conservative Christian, I believe in the inerrancy of the Word, I'm basically declaring that I'm an originalist. I believe that what the Bible says, if we can research it to its original intent, its context, okay, the actual original languages, and what the Bible said, that when I say I'm an inerrantist, I'm an originalist, and I believe that what the Bible says is true, and that should be the governing document for Christianity and for the way the Christian believes and the way the Christian lives. But somehow the progressives say, oh no, it's a living document. It changes over time. But what does that mean? It means that it becomes subject to human interpretation rather than being a directive document that tells us what we should think, how we should live, what we should believe, and what the rule of law should be, and what the definition of our very faith should be when it comes to the Scriptures and comes to the Bible. So the progressives use this tactic all the time to disparage those of us who believe in inerrancy, and now they use the same tactic to disparage those who believe in the original text of the Constitution. Because we all know, don't we, that all documents are living, and there's no such thing as an objective truth. But as I've said so many times on this program, we saw off the very branch upon which we sit when we buy into that logic or lack thereof. Because when you say there's no such thing as truth and that's the truth, you've just committed what? A self-refuting claim. When you say, I can't tolerate the intolerant, you've just committed a self-refuting fallacy. You're sawing off the very branch of logic upon which you sit. When you say, I hate those hateful people, or I'm sure that nothing is sure, and I know that nothing can be known. And we know that the Constitution is a living document, which would mean that if you actually believe in the transient nature, the subjective nature of language and proclamation, the human voice, that the very words you just uttered would have to be quote-unquote living, malleable, like jello, and therefore they have no substance or meaning either. Therefore, your own argument against originalism presupposes that what you're saying right now is valid and therefore an original statement that needs to be taken as fact. But yet you're saying there are no facts. Do you get my point? The whole progressive agenda, the whole progressive argument is a house of cards. It collapses in upon itself because there are no truths, so they claim, but they yet say, and that's true, that there are no truths. So when Gorsuch comes out and claims that he wants to defend the original intent of the Constitution as a context for law, he's basically saying that he as a judge should be blind. He should be blind at administering justice, as the statue of Lady Justice shows us. Now keep in mind what she holds in her hand. She holds a scale. Why? Because she blindly holds the objective standard, the scale, that cannot be changed. It's immutable. It's objective. You cannot put your thumb on it. You cannot change the weights. You cannot change the balance. Lady Justice holds a scale, and that scale represents what C.S. Lewis told us. It represents a measuring rod outside of those things being measured. And that you can do no measuring without that measuring rod. You have to have the objective standard. You have to have the measuring rod to do the measuring necessary. You have to have the scales that are accurate, time-tested, unchangeable, and true, that people can trust as Lady Justice holds them blindly because she wants to resist the temptation to influence them in any way whatsoever. So justice is weighed in the scales of objectivity. We know this. We know that G.K. Chesterton told us that when you get rid of big laws, you don't get liberty, but rather thousands of little laws. Again, I'm repeating myself here, but this is an important quote. The big laws represent those time-tested truths, that scale. The little laws are those small man-made opinions that rush in to fill the vacuum when we stop holding that objective standard, the originalism of the Constitution, and we put our thumb on the scale. As we evaluate what's going on with Gorsuch right now, we need to recognize the importance of originalism, and we need to support him and all others that are defending it right now. This is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sitting in for Tony Perkins. We're going to take a commercial break right now, and we'll be right back in a couple minutes.
From defunding Planned Parenthood to confirming a pro-life justice to serve on the Supreme Court, we're going to need your help to advocate for life in the digital sphere. Sometimes all it takes for truth to be heard is for everyday Americans to use their social media platforms to advance the pro-life cause. At Family Research Council's Pro-Life Con Digital Action Summit, a diverse group of advocates who are using the latest technologies to advance the pro-life cause helped empower viewers to better reach their community on platforms like Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and blogs. Speakers include Rebecca Buell, who was able to reverse her chemical abortion with the help of the internet, and Brandy Swindell, whose women's healthcare organization was featured in Cosmopolitan as a pro-life alternative to Planned Parenthood. Discover the amazing things digital activists are doing for life in 2017 and empower yourself and your community to do more at frc.org/prolifecon.
From Samaritan's Purse and Franklin Graham comes Facing Darkness. In 2014, as the Ebola virus was devastating West Africa,
the numbers of new cases and deaths are still rising.
International relief organization Samaritan's Purse stepped up.
God has called us to care for the dying, to care for those that are suffering.
We can't say we're Samaritan's Purse and not help.
My phone rang. One of our doctors, Kent Brantley, has Ebola.
And then David looked at me and he said, "You too have Ebola."
We're there to save life. We're there in your name. Why?
Despite the fact that things were out of control, we knew that God was in control.
God puts you in places and supplies the strength to deal with.
Jesus Christ didn't run. We run to the fire. We don't run away from it.
Facing Darkness, a true story of faith. In select cinemas for one night only, Thursday, March 30th. For theaters and tickets, go to facingdarknessmovie.com. That's facingdarknessmovie.com.
American Family Radio. Equipping you to change the culture.
My name is Teresa. I own a taxi business. I drive all day long. I pick up people, take them to the doctor all day long. One day I climbed into my van, and I never even knew this radio station existed, and it was just on. And I believe with all my heart that God put it on the radio for me. I am a witness for the Lord. I have had lots of opportunity to lead people to the Lord. Listening to your station only gives me more confidence. I have followed in faith by opening this company, and AFR just really lifts me up in spirit and lets me know that I'm doing the right thing. Just encourages me and my clients.
Your partnership makes a difference. Join us for our 3-day share-a-thon starting April 4th. American Family Radio, boldly standing for truth for your family.
Welcome back to Washington Watch this afternoon. March 22nd, 2017. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins. And you can follow Tony on Twitter. His Twitter handle is T Perkins, and mine is Dr. Everett Piper, D-R-E-V-E-R-E-T-T. If you want to call in this afternoon, we may have time to take calls. We'll have to see how the program goes. I was waiting for Travis Weber to join me in the last program, so I had to stretch it out and give you a little monologue. He was actually still on the floor, I'm told, in the hearings, so he wasn't able to make it. We may bring him back in later if time permits, but during this segment, I want to go into what we've scheduled because it's very important that we go into this particular story. Jessica Vaughn is with the Center for Immigration Studies. And she's going to join us right now to talk about this Maryland story where the Rockville High School 14-year-old girl was raped by two other students inside a school bathroom. Both of the students, these male students, were illegal immigrants. Here to talk to us right now is Director of Policy Studies for the Washington, D.C. based Center for Immigration Studies, Jessica Vaughn. Jessica, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
All right, I'm going to give you time on this, and this is one of our shorter segments. So why don't you take the ball right now and tell us what happened and tell us what we should be doing about it?
Sure. This is a very disturbing case that's happened in Rockville, Maryland, which is a suburb of Washington, D.C. A 14-year-old girl was walking with an 18-year-old man who is also, they're both ninth graders in Rockville High School. And he and his friend pulled her into the boys' bathroom at about 9 a.m. the other morning and proceeded to brutally assault her, rape her, and assault her in other ways. At 9 a.m. in the high school while the school is in session, this happened. The girl immediately reported it. It turns out that the two people who have been charged with this assault are illegal aliens who recently arrived in the country from Central America. ICE is not ICE, the Immigration Enforcement Agency, is not releasing information about one of the accused because he is 17 years old, although he's going to be charged as an adult. The other, the 18-year-old, was originally entered illegally and apparently was resettled in Maryland under the Obama administration's catch and release program, their policy with respect to these this all these arrivals of Central Americans illegally has been to resettle them in communities wherever they want to go at taxpayer expense. And there have been more than 100,000 of these kids who arrived on their own to join usually parents who are already living in the country illegally. And the schools that have been forced to accommodate them have had really real difficulties in doing it. They are, most of these kids have only a couple of years of education when they arrive here, but they're of high school age or older. And so they're putting in, them in, enrolling them as ninth graders, often in special programs because they don't have English language skills. They need remedial education. In a lot of places, they don't even want to be in school. They really want to be working.
Is it true that the Maryland Supreme Court, or is it the Supreme Court of the United States, which is it that actually has issued a ruling that schools cannot deny enrollment to these illegal immigrants, even if they're this old? Is that true?
That is a state law in Maryland that okay. Kids up that, but it's not. It doesn't say they must be in school, but it says that 18-year-olds can be in school. In fact, up to age 21, they can be in the high schools, although it seems crazy to have these kids in programs and with access to much younger kids in the schools. Part of the reason, though, is with these unaccompanied minors, some of whom aren't even minors anymore, obviously, is that their advocates, the contractors that have received money from the federal government to resettle them, have told school districts that they must mainstream these kids. I knew of one jurisdiction in Massachusetts that tried to create a night school for the kids so that they could work, which was what they wanted to do, and, you know, get remedial education and English language school classes and so on. But they were sued by the Department of Justice, Obama's Department of Justice.
For doing the night school?
Mainstreaming, yes, because they weren't mainstreaming these kids.
So they came up with a reasonable solution to have a different program, a night school for these older students that actually want to learn something and maybe get mainstreamed. But the federal government, if not the state, the local government, is denying the parents and the school boards and the local communities the right to do this?
Yes, they are. It's wrong on so many levels. First of all, we shouldn't even be allowing these kids to resettle in the United States. It's only providing a huge incentive for them to keep trying to come illegally. 80% of the people that they are resettled with are in the country illegally already. So it's basically an illegal alien family reunification program. And then the schools need to deal with them, and they're not getting any extra money for these kids because usually they arrive long after their budgets have been settled, but they do need all kinds of special programs.
Okay, Jessica.
We're having all these crime problems. I mean, certainly only a small fraction of them are criminals, but there are gangs and human trafficking organizations that have taken advantage of the lenient resettlement policy and used it, you know, to profit their criminal enterprises.
Jessica, we're going to have to take a break here in a second, so I'm going to give you 30 seconds or thereabout. Tell us what we should do.
Well, the Trump administration has already taken action by ending the catch-and-release program. So these kids are not automatically being let into the country. But now, you know, we have more than 100,000 of them who already have been. And so they, you know, ICE needs to clean up the mess by, when they identify them, they're trying to deport them. That's all we can do, but it's a long, expensive process.
All right, Jessica Vaughn with the Center for Immigration Studies. Thank you so much for joining us and educating us on this issue.
My pleasure.
Again, Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. The call-in number is 866-372-7234. Coming up next, we're going to kick over into the Hosea Initiative, Terry Beatley. She's going to talk to us about the Tommy Lahren story and the Blaze and this pro-choice comment within this abortion, pro-choice, pro-life conversation that we're having within our culture. Dr. Everett Piper will be right back in a couple minutes.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, it looks like the sell-off has begun, or has it? We'll have to wait and see. We need a few more days of this, but we see the market down over 1% this week. And, of course, that's happened 11 other times after such a long streak of not seeing markets go down more than 1%. 9 out of those 11 times after 3 months, it was right back to where it was, and then some. We'll see if that happens this time, but I still think there's going to be some downside pressure yet to happen. API, crude oil inventories, reported a climb in inventories by 4.5 million barrels. That is a significant increase if that ends up being the accurate call here by the end of the week. They also noticed that there was a decline of 833,000 barrels of distilled products, 4.9 million barrels in gasoline supplies alone, also down. So gasoline supplies are always down this time of year as refineries go through their maintenance cycle, and that would have a lot to do with crude oil inventories being up 4.5 million barrels. But one would have to suspect, since gasoline demand is unusually high for this time of year, that we should start seeing a drawdown on this record supply of crude oil. Obviously, that's going to continue to weigh on the markets as well. FedEx missed earnings. FedEx, a very good forward-looking stock, to give us some indication of where the economy might be.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. If you want to know more about what I do, go to okwu.edu. If you want to follow Tony on Twitter, that's T. Perkins, T-P-E-R-K-I-N-S, and you can always follow the Family Research Council by going to their website, frc.org. I want to move into this next segment quickly here. Basically, here's the intro. There's a 24-year-old talk show host, Tommy, on the conservative site, The Blaze, Glenn Beck's site. She's been suspended temporarily. Why? The suspension comes after Tommy Lahren made a pro-choice comment on last Friday's episode of The View. With us now is Terry Beatley, president and founder of the Hosea Initiative, an organization dedicated to educating women about the deception of abortions. She's no stranger to the pro-life debate and the nuances of the quote-unquote conversation. Terry, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Dr. Piper. Glad to be on with you.
Great to have you. Let me hit a couple bullets. I'm going to turn you loose. Okay, so we had Tommy on this episode of The View. Why she chose to go there is an interesting question in of itself. She, on that particular program, said that she is a conservative, but she's a pro-choice conservative because she believes the government should stay, quote, out of her guns and out of her body, both. She makes these comments, however, in the context of in previous episodes of her program, a month or two or three or 4 months ago, she said that abortion was the killing of babies. So she's flipped somehow. And the question is why? And then here's the one other bullet, and then I'm going to ask you to just respond. Glenn Beck, in his radio program, tried to explain his position on Tommy. Here's his quote. I try to hire people who have a different opinion because I believe in being intellectually rigorous. I don't want straw men. I want people to make real arguments on the other side so we can learn from each other and we can grow. You have any, the context of my question is I used to parrot this vacuous nonsense. At one time when I was in my early 20s, I fancied myself as a pro-choice Republican, and I parroted the party line, which was, my candidate doesn't believe in abortion. She just doesn't believe in legislating morality. Now, why do I not say that any longer? Because it's patently nonsense. It makes no sense, and it dumbs down the conversation, and it ignores the fact that we're actually killing a human being that has the right to live, and that we should legislate against that. It is wrong to kill a human being. The ball is yours. Run with it.
Okay. How I would address this is, number one, Tommy has fallen into a trap, okay? And I would just venture to say she doesn't understand how she's been ensnared in these lies. So right for your listeners, I'm just going to start first at just a really low level. So what she claimed, those things you just said, she also claimed that she represents middle America. She claims that she's, you know, a constitutional conservative, didn't want to be a hypocrite and all that, and so stay away from my guns and stay out of my body. Now, the problem with that is the government, the law, is constantly regulating our bodies, if you will. You are not allowed to use your body to rape my body. I cannot legally drive down I-95 down to Florida going 110 miles an hour. They regulate how heavy I can push my foot on that gas pedal.
Or driving the wrong direction.
Exactly. Thank you. And, you know, they regulate that it's against the law for a father to have sex with his daughter. But all that's good because it's called common law. Common sense. That's exactly right. And so just on a really low level, she's fallen into this snare, which is what you were identifying years ago. You used to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, those politicians, they can't be legislating morality. They do it every day, hopefully for our own good. Now, the other bit, now she claims that she's a constitutional conservative. I would be recommending to her that she really needs to go back and study, and I'm talking about study, Sir William Blackstone. What was meant by the laws of nature and the laws of nature and nature's God? You know it better than I do, but I know it well enough to say that those two principles, those two things, when paralleled, it gives us the guidance that we need because God writes them on our heart. So, you know, like the laws of nature, the moral law governing nature and inscribed on the heart of man. So I would say, Tommy, if you and I were sitting here looking at a bucket of dead babies that have been ripped to shreds, would you be able to say that that's beauty? And of course she's going to say, no, it makes me want to vomit. I say, okay, now we can triangulate and we can then determine, well, is it good? Does this represent good or goodness? And of course she's going to say no. Does it then represent truth? So going back to the same premise of beauty, good, goodness, and truth. And the answer is no, no, no. You can triangulate from one to the other to the other to the other. she claims to know the Constitution and all this. Somewhere along the line, she didn't get that base. She's fallen into the trap of, it's my body. Stay out of it. Stay away from it. Those are the lies that one of the primary originalists of those lies was Dr. Bernard Nathanson. He co-founded NARAL. He was an atheist. He's a Jewish man. He co-founded
30
NARAL,
seconds.
Which is now known as... Yeah. Mm-hmm.
30 seconds here. Let me just make a transition. You're spot on. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for drawing our attention to the fallacies of the pro-choice argument. It ignores the fact that not only is it the woman's body, there's another body involved, and it's called the body of a baby. Thank you so much for helping us through this today.
Right into the next point.
Thanks, Terry. Blessings to you, and thank you for joining Washington Watch. This is Dr. Everett Piper. We're going to take a quick break, and coming up afterwards, we're going to talk to Eben Thranholm, a Danish journalist, about immigration in Europe.
Whoa, we have not had a response like this before. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We've been doing these spiritual heritage tours for like 20 years. We're sold out for June already, if you can believe that. We've got space left on our September tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. We call them spiritual heritage tours, and I don't know how long these September seats will last. To what do you attribute that to, someone might ask? Maybe it's the fact that we have a new person occupying the White House. Maybe that has something to do with it. But in any event, we welcome you to come with us on our September Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon and Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips. You can do both, or you can do one or the other. We'd love to have you. Go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
Physicians keep learning after medical school in order to better save lives. Shouldn't Christian leaders keep learning to better save souls? Hi, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, and online around the world. Are you a Christian leader who thinks it's important to keep learning? WBS online weekend and evening classes allow graduate students to become better equipped to make disciples in a constantly changing world. For more information, visit wbs.edu.
EngageMagazine.net has rich articles inviting you into great dialogue for any stage of life. Here's Teddy James.
The things that we value, there's no difference between the generations at all. We value hard work. We value family. We value values. Those things are true across generational lines. We don't want you thinking about Engage. Our heart is to get you to see the heart of God.
Go to EngageMagazine.net and join the discussion.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there's probably never been a more important time in our economy to be thinking about a charitable gift annuity. I hope you'll do that just to shore up, to firm up some more income, permanent income, income that you can count on for the rest of your life while you're doing the Lord's work. A charitable gift annuity has been something I've been talking about for 25 years. Finally, we're seeing even mainstream start to get on board with the merits of charitable gift annuities. I hope you'll consider it. You can call the AFA Foundation. Someone there will help you work through the details and find out whether you qualify for a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon, March 22nd, 2017. Again, the call-in number, if we have time to take calls, is 866-372-7234. Before I transition to the next guest, I just want to comment on what Terry helped us through in terms of the critique of the pro-life, pro-choice conversation. I am a fan of much of what Tommy has said on her program with The Blaze. I am a fan of much of what Glenn Beck says on his program. But I have to respectfully disagree with what she said in terms of staying away from my guns and staying out of my body, because as Terry pointed out, there's another body involved here. There are two bodies involved. One is the woman's body, and one is the body of a little boy and a little girl, the youngest among us. Do they not have the right to live? Or are they somehow left subject to your whim, your happiness, your convenience, your comfort? There are two bodies involved. What gives one person the right, because he or she is stronger, to take the life of the weaker? Where in our Constitution does anybody have the right to ignore the body of the most helpless in favor of the body of the person who's stronger? It makes no sense. There are two bodies involved. So this argument of stay out of my body ignores the fact that you should stay out of the child body too and not inject a needle into its head and kill it. Again, I used to make these arguments, folks, and I find no acceptable argument that suggests that the government can't legislate morality. As Terry helped us understand, all legislation assumes a moral assumption. Whether it's a law against speeding, or a law against murder, there is a moral assumption that you should comply with the law, because to do otherwise is to compromise other people's safety, other people's happiness, other people's property, other people's privacy, and other people's lives. And in the case of violating the life, the privacy, and the safety and the comfort of the youngest among us, we have no right to use the excuse that you can't legislate morality and that you should stay out of the discussion. I also disagree with Glenn Beck when he says that for the sake of intellectual diversity, he's going to invite the pro-choice, the pro-abortion person to join his staff. Are we going to invite the pro-KK person to join your staff? Are you going to invite some member that represents the Third Reich to join your staff? Are you going to invite Hermit Gosnell to join your staff? Are you going to invite somebody who's pro-child labor or pro-human trafficking or pro-Southern plantation slavery? Of course you're not, because there are certain ideas that are so aberrant that you're not going to include them under the banner of intellectual diversity. And you're going to make the choice that these things are just plain and simply wrong. And if killing a human being isn't among those bad choices that should be excluded from the conversation labeled intellectual diversity, I don't know what is. I don't know what is. We can't drink this Kool-Aid and dumb down the definition of a baby to somebody else's choice. The youngest among us have the right to live. All right. Eben Thranholm is a Danish journalist, and she was recently cited. It might be Iben. I'll ask her in a second if I'm mispronouncing her first name. In an interview that was titled, Is Denmark on the Brink? And this was an investigative journalist interview where Eben is making the compelling argument about European nations like Sweden, the neighbor to Denmark, losing their identity to multiculturalism. The question in that interview, is Denmark next? And you might be asking the question, and should ask the question, is the United Kingdom next? Is Great Britain and England next? Is America next? If we worship at the altar of multiculturalism, has culture lost its definition to the point where some other culture will rush in to fill the vacuum? Joining us now all the way from Copenhagen, Denmark, is the author herself, Eben Thranholm. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on this show.
Am I mispronouncing your first name? Help me, please.
No, you can say Eben, you can say Ivan. I mean, it's okay to say Ivan. I mean, I think most Americans would pronounce it that way, so
okay.
That's fine.
Okay. Well, I read this interview that you recently did, and I was fascinated with it because you were very forthright in challenging what I'm going to call the vacuum of multiculturalism. And I use that intentionally because I'm a fan of G.K. Chesterton. I've already quoted him once on this program where he said, if you get rid of big laws, you don't get liberty, but rather thousands of little laws that rush in to fill the vacuum. And I think the same principle holds true when it comes to creating a vacuum of culture. When you suck culture dry of its prevailing influence that has governed and guided it for centuries, something will fill that vacuum. And I would argue you were suggesting, as you watch your neighbor in Sweden, that something isn't all that pleasant to watch.
Yes, exactly. You know, in the Bible it is said that if a house is left swept, tidied, and unoccupied, it will eventually be taken over by evil. And I fear that this is what's going on all over the West. Because I think there is an aspect that we don't really address much in the debate, and that is the spiritual dimension of this whole conflict with Islam. Because the decline of Christianity in the Western world has created an enormous spiritual and moral vacuum. And this vacuum actually is what Islamism is now nourishing and is taking advantage of. So I think it's really, I mean, the radical Islam is actually, I think it is being created by the rejection of Christianity, and that's why it's gaining power. Because terrorism has, I think it has sort of grown from a de-Christianized culture, because secularism and Islamism are two faces of the same destructive spirituality. So it's like two parasites nurturing each other. So, I mean, while justice and mercy, which are Christian values, they spring, of course, from Christianity. But if there is no such spiritual counterweight of grace and forgiveness and charity, and only a political counterpoint, it doesn't work. And we see that most of our politicians are failing. They have no political solutions. Now, this tragedy that happened in London today, where some people were killed in the terror attack, we will hear our politicians tell us that this has nothing to do with Islam. Islam is a peaceful religion. And people will light candles and talk about united, shared values, and we have to stand together. We should not fear. We should continue to live like nothing has happened. And what we hear, you know, every time there has been a terror attack. And it only, and this goes on until the next terror attack will happen. And I think we really need to understand that the reason why that Islam has such a grip on Europe and perhaps also the United States is because of our lack of Christian faith, because this is not a really political struggle. It's spiritual warfare. And few people, even Christians, has understood that. And I think we need to understand that the reason why also integration is failing so badly in Europe is because we lost our identity, our Christian identity. Because obviously secularism is not enough to defeat radical Islam. And that is the weak point of Europe. We think that democracy will save us from everything, and we ensure each other that because we're Democrats, nothing evil can happen to us. But it's happening. It's happening. And I think it's getting out of control. And our politicians seems to be completely standing helpless in front of this problem. And that's why I think that it is because of our lack of Christian faith. And we need to understand that we're weakening our own culture by this decline of the Christian faith.
You know, there's an author here in the United States. I don't know if you know who he is or not. Dinesh D'Souza. And he wrote a few years ago about this very issue. And he argued that the progressive case for coexistence, and that we're all in this together and we're all in a big group hug, and it's a kumbaya moment where both religions, Islam and Christianity, have the same goal of love and peace and cooperative existence. Dinesh D'Souza said, no, that's not the case. And in fact, he argued that the loss of Christian morality is one of the reasons that Islam is rushing in to fill the vacuum. And he said, Islamic radicals make their case against America and the West not on the grounds that our cultures are Christian, but on the grounds that we have abandoned Christianity. He went on to say this. In his May 2006 letter to President Bush, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad faulted America not for being Christian, but for not being Christian enough. And many years earlier, the radical Saeed Qutb made the same point, criticizing, in that modern era, religious convictions are no more than a matter of antiquarian interest for the United States and for the West. And they go on to say, we don't criticize you for being too Christian. We criticize you for not being Christian enough. And otherwise, you guys don't believe your own heritage, and we'll fill the vacuum for you. Thank you. Do you agree?
Exactly. I mean, it's clear that the post-Christian ideology is like secularism, possesses no spiritual strength. But it takes more to win a war than just surveillance and military hardware, which is the only thing that is being offered in the West. It takes more strength, like you said, and faith. And it's the first time in history that we are facing Islam without our Christian faith, because back in time it was always the Catholic Church, it was always the Christian Church that were united against Islam. And everybody now says, well, it's not a war of religion, but like I said before, it's spiritual warfare, because this is about, you know, spirituality, it's about morality, it's about values. And recently there was a TV program on Danish national TV where they portrayed three young women, Danish women, who converted to Islam, not because they were going to marry a Muslim man, but simply because they wanted to become Muslims. And it was clear that all of them had messy lives, and they needed, you know, some stability, some rules, some order. So I think, you know, this moral chaos that the 68 movement made, and there are so many people who have broken lives, and now Islam is coming to give them some order and some rules to live by, so
Thank
that
you
they
so-
can, you know, tie up all these mess that we have made. And it's really a tragedy that Christianity is not really trying to help these people, and or that trying to go back to Christianity.
Thank you so much. Thank you for pointing that out. Thank you for pointing that out. I have said over and over again that people will ask, why in the world would a progressive feminist show any interest in Islam? It would seem to be antithetical to her very worldview. And I've said, because she wants structure. There's no structure in secularism. Everybody wants answers. Do you agree?
Exactly. And that is actually the dangerous part, because now, somehow, even though that we are very... pay a lot of attention to terrorism, it is becoming trendy to be a Muslim. And you see all the fashion magazines, they're showing the jihad, the headcloth. And it's becoming fashionable. And I've heard a lot of feminists, you know, being in defense of wearing the jihad as a kind of, you know, expression of the right to decide for yourself. I mean, come on, they're bringing women back to slavery now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just can't believe it. It's a total paradox. But I think it's because that our lives have become so messy. There was no structure. There was no rules, no order. So people simply want some kind of, a kind of simple system to live by. And
right.
Islam is actually offering that.
Islam is a religion of rules. It's a religion of submission and structure. And when there is no structure in culture, when culture loses the cult, if you will, if it loses its binding glue, it can't survive for long. Something will rush in to fill the vacuum. And you're spot on.
Exactly.
You're saying exactly. And we need to listen to you in America because you're sitting right there on the front line of this, I'm going to call it lunacy, of multicultural immigration assumptions where we assume it doesn't matter what immigrants bring with them because they can bring whatever culture with them because it's no better or no worse than your own, and we should all just have a spirit of coexistence. And you're waving a red flag on that.
Yeah, but I think what is really, really crucial to point out is that we no longer have a moral compass. And this is really, you know, a big, big problem. Because before Christianity would provide this role, keeping us, it has kept us united over centuries. But we can no longer distinguish between good and evil. And I see that in Europe, that our politicians cannot distinguish between good and evil anymore. And that's why it is a total chaos. And I really think that the church and believers, Christian believers, has a huge responsibility to try to make up for this mess and try to bring some structure and order into our morality again. And it's going to be a huge task. But I don't see anybody else who can do this, because our politicians can certainly not. They're actually betraying us. And they're using Christian arguments to have open borders and bring in all this chaos. It's just terrible. I mean, many people in the church would say, we should have open borders, otherwise we're not good Christians. But I really think, as a Christian, you have the right to defend yourself, because you have the right to defend your own life. It is even in the Catholic Church catechism that you should love your own life so much that you want to protect it. And it also goes for your culture and for your nation. And I think that's very important. But here in Europe, most of the church are becoming leftist. So they want open borders to feel as good people. You know, here in Europe, people are very occupied with the idea that they should be good people. You know, so, and a lot of Christians are very fearful. They don't really want to make any kind of critique because they're afraid of being called racist. And we should be very aware of that, because that is a kind of total disorientation and a misguided compassion.
Iben, thank you so much for taking the time to join us all the way from Denmark. This has been a fascinating interview and great insight. So blessings to you and best wishes to you as you fight the good fight for Christ as his kingdom there in Denmark.
Thank you so much, and God bless you.
Likewise. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in this afternoon for Tony Perkins. Again, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. If you want to research us, I'd welcome it. If you want a great Christian university that stands for the truth of Christ and the truth of Scripture. Again, remember the words of Chesterton. Get rid of the big laws, you don't get liberty, but the vacuum will be filled by little laws. It is the principles of Christ that keep the power of the government coming into our lives. Blessings and fighting the good fight.
For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.